P-25. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. By the time Dan McCarthy awoke on Tuesday, which, as it went, was a matter of moments after Tara yawned herself back to life and loudly exclaimed her own surprise that she had entirely missed the morning and slept through to the afternoon, the rest of the world had already digested not one, but two major announcements about his forthcoming appearance on Focus 2020. The first had come from his wife, Emma, with the second coming very quickly thereafter from the less responsible and less welcome source of Jan Geller. Much was explained to Dan and Tara as soon as they walked upstairs together, sharing amazed comments about just how long they'd been asleep. They were spared the specific details of what Clark and Godfrey had found and how it compared to what Timo and Chip had found, findings which had been shared and compared in a few phone calls over the course of the morning, and nor did they seek them out. Everyone seemed to be instinctively on the same page about specialization in this regard, with it making little sense for everyone to dive into the same minutiae when there were so many topics to cover and so much to be achieved. One thing the well-rested duo did want to see as soon as they heard about it was Emma's statement, and watch it they did. A video statement of this kind, which would inevitably rack up billions of views within hours, would normally have felt like a very big deal for Emma McCarthy, or indeed anyone else. Relative to what was coming later in the day, however, it felt like a minor task to tick off her to-do list. The statement was only necessary to facilitate that later event, with Emma's decision to issue the statement early in the day being taken so that the TV networks would have plenty of time to pimp it out for ratings, and so that there was enough time for just about everyone in the world to know what was coming, regardless of which time zone they were in and what working or waking hours they kept. All Emma gave away was that she would be present and wouldn't be arriving alone. She didn't name which allies would be with her or get into details of where the best known among them currently were. She did, however, reiterate one very true point, albeit with certain liberties taken in terms of which details to leave out, and one which was essentially all the public knew about Godfrey's visible abduction and Dan and Tara's unseen but apparent befalling of the same fate. That an unexpected problem on New Kerguelen meant that the messengers required their urgent assistance. Emma went on to say that discoveries on and beyond New Kerguelen were being analyzed as she spoke, and that while the messengers' society was experiencing some major and unprecedented turbulence, they at least didn't have to worry about any Coles and Slaters going out of their way to make things worse for their own gain. With the safety net of the statement being recorded rather than going out live, Emma went at it with a very short series of bullet point notes, rather than a fully prepared script. Despite the ability to have as many tries as it took to get things just right, however, she was sufficiently happy with the first and uploaded the video file without delay. "This is almost like when I lost a day in Cuba," Dan laughed all of a sudden when he saw the clock in Phil's kitchen and got a reminder of what time it really was. "Remember when the uplift powers were too strong for my brain to deal with and it got exhausted?" To that point, Emma pointed out that Dan and Tara might have been exhausted in a very real and equally unfamiliar sense by the temporal displacement their bodies had experienced not once, but twice during their crossings to and from the mysterious world of Sanctuary. No one disagreed, immediately considering that the theory made a whole lot of sense.
"Well, you didn't miss much here in any case," William Godfrey chimed in. "No disasters, no major escalations in societal unrest, not even any meaningfully damaging movement in the SMMA data. Our friend Jan Geller did baselessly insinuate that the Chinese are working on secret and illegal nuclear weapons testing, which tells me the new trio is trying to make Ding's life difficult on one hand and distract from the damaging Massoud investigations on the other."
"Ding?" Tara asked, thinking of the Chinese premier for the first time in a while and realizing only then that his silence was conspicuous in its own right.
"Why do they want to make his life difficult?"
Because if I was gone for good, which they think I might be, Godfrey said, Ding would be among the most obvious choices to take over as ICA chairman. Their transparency would be funny if it weren't so tragic. We'll end both of their careers this evening, and rightfully so. But if they were left to it, I'd wager that it would be a matter of days at most before one of them blinks and throws the other to the wolves. They want my position, and they think that working together until they're the only choices left standing is their best way of ensuring one of them gets it. Ding is smarter than they give him credit for, and certainly smarter than either of them. So even if I was decisively out of the picture, they wouldn't be getting what they want. But believe me, that is what they want. That's what I'm getting at. Dan mulled these words over in his mind. I know it's Geller, so it is pretty reasonable to assume everything she says is a lie, but are we absolutely sure there's nothing in this story about Chinese nuclear escalations? Because there is a power vacuum right now, with you out of the picture and our national position isn't what it used to be. I don't have anything against Ding personally, and he has seemed to be fairly honorable in his dealings with us, but he could be trying to position himself and his country to lead the world when it's on the other side of all this uncertainty, just like Slater and Cole are trying to get themselves in the top job. I quietly called Ding immediately after Geller's report, Godfrey said. For one thing, if it had been true then, Blitz wouldn't have an exclusive. The Chinese government isn't the American government, no disrespect, and things like that don't tend to leak out like this. In any case, after his initial denials, I asked Ding, largely as a bluff with no intention of seeing it through, whether he'd be willing to sit down with Leisha so we could put his honesty over this issue to the test. Not only did he say yes, he said he would love to see Leisha and the rest of us. That's not happening, but his willingness showed he has nothing to hide. He's in Beijing, having flown home last night, and he was primarily glad to know we're alive and well. We can trust him to keep quiet, but he knows you and I will be on the show, Dan, and he was glad on that too. He even gave me some minor but embarrassing personal dirt on Cole from his time as Western Secretary of Ding's ELF. More than satisfied by a much deeper answer than he'd expected, Dan nodded several times. This is the kind of stuff we have to shut down, man, Clark said. None of this is about us having a petty grudge against Geller or anything like that. This is about a serious need to stop her from pushing this kind of thing on TV. Millions of people are scared and angry about China now, and another reason for those three idiots pushing this nuclear narrative today is probably that they didn't whip up as much fear and anger as they wanted to with the Dortlu Tepe thing. Fear is their currency. I mean, from what Walker's video told us, it pretty much literally is. They make chaos. Chaos makes fear. Fear makes them money. No one disputed this, what with how plainly Walker had stated as much in his video and how much supporting evidence he had provided. With the full support of Timo and Chip, the group in Eastview made the collective decision that the full document Walker left behind should never be made public, in case any of his suggested connections between Emporion-linked companies and the individuals he had identified might have been more speculative than the others. Some cases were black and white, with payment details proving the links beyond a shadow of a doubt. But from personal experience at Walker's hand, Dan McCarthy knew that being publicly accused of something could ruin an innocent person's life. The file would be passed on to law enforcement agencies, the group agreed, but they would, of course, hold on to their existing copies and make further backups to ensure nothing would ever be lost. Dan liked this approach best, of letting law enforcement do their thing, but also retaining the data to make sure none of it was conveniently lost, as had too often been the case in years gone by when high-profile individuals were implicated in financial scandals or worse. With a combination of Dan's long sleep and the time difference between Colorado and New York, meaning that only a few hours remained until they had to be in the studio for Focus 2020, preparations stepped up considerably once he and Tara were looped in. The next major development was Leisha's return from Fiori Frontieri, which came only after Dan made a quick phone call to Timo to request the alien's presence. Leisha flashed himself into the farmhouse's kitchen almost immediately,
with no real sign of hard feelings towards Godfrey or any persistent feelings of guilt or regret over his order following elimination of two hostile visitors to Birchwood the previous evening. Indeed, and quite infectiously so, Leisha looked rather chipper. "Good news?" Dan asked, not sure what it could be if there indeed was any.
"I've been in frequent communication with Sacco," the alien revealed. "Alessandro and I were initially passing on questions to Kajil, the young engineer who identified the temporal displacement we experienced upon our crossings to and from Sanctuary. Alessandro was performing calculations we hadn't considered, and before long he was talking more or less directly with Kajil, with Sacco and I effectively acting as, well, telephones would be your clearest analogy."
A slight grin crossed Leisha's lips, as though he was pleased to have thought of a metaphor that helped the humans make sense of what he was telling them, even though he suspected they'd already understood well enough.
"But later, Sacco and I discussed the tensions and tragedies that befell New Kerguelen in the chaos surrounding our leap of destiny across the gate. Or, to be clearer, the chaos that came when we failed to return within a few minutes, as we expected we would. Everyone knows I am on Earth, assisting you all with some urgent problems. Ironically, much like the people of Earth know you have recently spent time assisting us with some problems on New Kerguelen. Anyway, the population is placid in their knowledge that we made it back safely, and our former squadron commanders are maintaining order without force. Everyone remains in the shelter, and will do so until I return. And naturally, Sacco hasn't shared the news that Billy remains on Sanctuary. He is not keen on my return journey, but that is a bridge I will cross once we have dealt with our enemies in New York."
"Bingo," Clark said with a wide smile. He liked hearing Leisha talk like that, or at least he liked receiving Leisha's silently shared telepathic thoughts like that, with the promise of dealing with our enemies in New York being something he very much looked forward to.
"They're going down."
"That they are," Leisha stated very firmly and very bluntly. "That they are."
With very little time left until they had to head to New York, the final big question of who would make up the group's team of panelists could no longer be avoided. Dan and Emma had more or less decided already, but he wasn't sure how Tara was going to take it. "About tonight," he began, "we really need to nail down the lineup and home in on who is handling what."
"I'll handle anything,"
Tara said, her tone chirpy as she seemingly relished the night ahead.
"I've gotten way better at speaking since all the times I've had to do it here and on New Kerguelen. Some of the times I've done it there, the stakes were as high as any can get. I can do pressure, so if Godfrey does the Emporian stuff and Dan talks about Dortolu Tepe, I'll take—"
"You're not on the panel," Emma cut in. "I was hoping you would take Piper."
Tara's mouth opened slowly in realization.
"Oh, right. Yeah, I knew you were doing it. I mean, I just watched your video where you said you're doing it. I guess I've gotten so used to it being me, Dan, and Godfrey at all the ICA events, and then part of my mind is always thinking you wouldn't want to leave Piper with anyone. But you will? With me?"
Emma nodded, glad Tara was taking it so well. She wasn't just okay with being excluded from the panel to care for Piper, she seemed honored by the role.
"And me," Clark said. "You're the best at keeping her happy, and I'll make sure you both keep safe."
Although no one spoke immediately after this comment, everyone heard Dan pensively blowing air from his lips and turned to see what was wrong.
"I don't like it," he said. "It's one thing being here, especially with Leisha, and when we were safe in the basement and everything, but when me and Emma are on a live TV show, that's exactly when someone who wanted to do something would try to do it. And Clark, listen, man, you know I'd take you over anyone else to keep us all safe, but they were armed last night."
"He's right," Emma sighed, holding the child they were talking about who had been more peaceful than ever throughout the day so far. "Me and Dan being together without Piper is an advertisement that Piper is somewhere else without us, and even though no one knows how special she is,
Everyone knows that if there was a way to get us to do or not do something, the leverage they need is...
What about Melly?
Tara suggested, sparing everyone, particularly Emma, from the need to have a worst-case scenario explicitly spelled out.
Melly?
Emma said. Dan raised his eyebrows and tipped his head back slightly, getting a sense of where Tara was going. Tara, meanwhile, turned directly to Leisha, but continued speaking out loud.
The safest place for us to keep Piper is on this side of the Earth to New Kerguelen Gate, but somewhere no one could ever reach us, a cloaked craft in the sky, you know, like where we met Melly.
You're going to be in the studio listening in to Slater and Cole and Geller's thoughts, so if you can't leave us in the craft without another one of your kind,
what about Melly? She loved spending time with Piper. I bet she'd be up for this.
And Piper loved her, Dan said. Yeah, I do like that. Clark? To the other's relief, Clark was nodding. Even better, in a similar manner to the way Tara's happiness at being tasked with caring for Piper had become clear moments earlier, he looked positively pleased by the emergence of this suggestion rather than just reluctantly accepting of the suggestion that Piper might not be totally safe under his physical protection on the ground.
That is the safest place, and it means I can be on the panel. Tara, if you're happy with Melly, and it sounds like you totally are, but please just tell me if you're not. I really want to do this.
Why?
Emma asked, very bluntly, but not explicitly disapprovingly.
What can you bring that we can't? As it is, it's 3-on-3, and us three are the most obvious three that people would pick. Where do you...
I would be happier if Clark was there,
Leisha interrupted. As pride flooded through him at this comment, Clark winked in the alien's direction.
And Tara, you'll be happy with Melly?
I like Melly,
she replied, smiling decisively.
And there were some general things I wanted to ask her last time but didn't have time for. I like this too.
Everyone seemed happy with the plan, and Leisha made a very quick call to Sacco to ask if he would be willing and able to pilot Melly across the gate to Earth and leave her in the craft that was already cloaked in the sky high over Colorado. Leisha didn't want to return to New Kerguelen unnecessarily, as he hadn't throughout the night, in case news of his physical presence, and particularly it being for a short time only, might unsettle the relatively good work of maintaining order the squadron were doing in a difficult time. With the population temporarily locked down in the shelter they had already come to think of as a cage, word that Leisha had returned could spark loud and possibly angry calls for him to intervene to allow them to leave. Difficulties lay ahead for Leisha, who was presumed by all to be set to take over as a formal leader of some kind or another on New Kerguelen once the dust had settled on their current post-architect turbulence, and all he could do for now was responsibly delay them until he had both assisted the generously helpful humans with their problems as much as he could, both in New York, by way of furtive telepathic communication, and on Sanctuary, where one human lay alone in space and time awaiting Leisha's promised return. Sacco agreed immediately, and within a few minutes he had confirmation from the squadron commanders that they too were supportive of the mission. Anything for Leisha, who even they had very recently come to see as an individual of rare courage and ability, and also from Melly, that she was enthusiastically keen to return to Earth's side of the space gate, and particularly so to see the remarkable baby Piper once more.
If there's anything we have to talk to Chip, Timo, or Alessandro about, we can call Colorado Springs from New York just the same as we can from here, William Godfrey said. Same with Henry and Bird. What I'm saying is, I think we should go. And they know Leisha is around, so we don't have to dream up some way of arriving in time in a conventional vehicle. We can just flash right into the building. Leisha, do you remember the studio?
The alien nodded slowly. Instinctively, he turned to Emma.
Now?
Everyone gather whatever you might need, she replied, holding a finger up to Leisha, then pointing Godfrey to Phil's laptop and pointing Tara to the basement in encouragement for her to grab some baby supplies. Around 3 minutes later, they were ready to leave.
But we're not all going to New York,
Emma said. She kissed Piper and handed her to Tara, who beamed widely right away. It meant so much for Emma to be handing her over and showing this much trust. The moment brought a tear to Tara's eye.
Thank you, she said. Ta-ta,
Piper said.
Ta-ta, Kay? Aunt Tara is okay,
she replied, slightly taken aback by yet another communicative progression.
I'm happy, like you.
Piper smiled, and then smiled even more as everyone, especially Dan, moved in to say their bye for nows and see you soons.
Melly is ready, Leisha told everyone at once. Sacco didn't stick around, but Melly is there. Is the plan for me to take Tara and Piper to her first, and then everyone else to New York?
Bingo, Clark said, hugging Tara tightly from the back once more while taking care not to hurt or irritate Piper. You two have fun up there, okay? I don't get to go in spaceships like this. A few seconds of laughter and one final thumbs up from Emma later, the kitchen was briefly consumed by a flash which faded to leave two fewer humans and no aliens present. They'll be fine, Dan said, turning to Emma upon realizing that she too would be feeling exactly what he was, that it had just gotten real, with Piper on a spaceship in the sky while they were about to engage in a high-risk but hopefully high-reward attempt to bring stability to their planet and justice to the snakes once and for all. Melly loves Piper, Piper loves her, and all the messengers love Tara. Ask Leisha or Billy when we see him again. She's like a princess up there. No one else present shared Dan's optimism that seeing Billy Kendrick again was a matter of when, rather than if, and most considered even if to be verging on the side of overly optimistic. No one said anything on that point, though, seeing little sense in doing so, and Leisha was back, alone, before Dan could notice the conspicuous silence.
New York?
The alien asked, looking very calm, having clearly had no problems bringing Tara and Piper to the cloaked spacecraft. Damn straight, Clark said, grasping Phil's laptop under his arm. This news ain't gonna start spreading itself.